Welcome to Leading the Next Generation with Tim Elmore. I am your co-host, Andrew McPeak, and our mission at Growing Leaders is to empower the emerging generations with skills to lead in real life. And Tim, I think we've got a good conversation today.
Yes, we do. We, as you know, Andrew, we have been working for months and months and months on a brand new book on Generation Z. And today, we're going to talk about some of the characteristics that I think will be very helpful for anyone who leads the next generation.
Absolutely.
Anybody.
Yeah.
Employers, teachers, parents, etc. We're going to talk about that today.
Yeah. Well, this whole journey for me started when I really asked the question, and we've been asking this question for a long time, how well do we really know the next generation?
Yeah.
And it really started, it's happened to me multiple times, but I remember the first time this happened was years ago when I was talking about the next generation, and you know, there's always somebody critiquing you in the back of the room.
Yeah.
Well, this time the guy decided to raise his hand and let his thoughts be known, and one of the questions he asked is, well, isn't every generation the same? I mean,
yeah,
you're talking about these kids as if they're different. I was a boneheaded kid, you know, back in 1970, whatever. And my answer to that, ever since that day, has always been the same whenever I hear that, which is the answer is, yes, you're right, and also, no, you're wrong, right? Mm-hmm. This is the difference that I've come down to. While our biology might be the same, in other words, kids are going through puberty, kids are going through adolescence, just like any generation ever has. While our biology remains the same, our circumstances are different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In other words, I'm going through puberty in an entirely different world.
Yeah.
And this is why it's so important that we continue to have these conversations about who is the next generation.
Yeah.
How are they different? How are they different from me as an adult? How are they different from millennials who we were leading, you know, 10 years ago or 5 years ago?
Yeah.
And without these questions, I think we're in trouble.
Yeah, well, and the fact is, you're talking about sociology. We are socialized slightly differently today than we would be in the 90s, and certainly different than the 70s when I was growing up as a teenager. So you're absolutely right. The makeup internally may not be too different. Our brains are still forming between 0 and 25 years old, but oh boy, are the circumstances different.
Yes.
So I want to pull a switcheroo today.
Okay.
I want to interview you. You typically are the one that's interviewing me, but you've done quite a bit of research, and our team is in front of tens of thousands of students every year. So we have firsthand experience, and then we have data that we've gathered. I want to ask you some questions about what you've dug up on Generation Z that you feel like would be helpful for our listeners to hear.
I would love to be interviewed.
Okay.
And I think that what we'll talk about today is answering the question, how is Generation Z going to be different from millennials?
Yeah.
This is
going to
be
right.
Our contrast.
There
so.
Have been shifts, no doubt about it. In fact, isn't it funny? You and I will still do events where they'll go, we're going to teach how to lead millennials. And you go, no, they're on staff with you right now.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Generation Z are now the kids.
Millennials are who you're talking to.
Yeah,
Generation
right.
Z is who you're leading.
Yeah, that's right. So anyway, let's jump in.
Let's do it.
So Andrew, you've discovered three specific statistics that you believe people are going to need to know if they're going to understand this kid that's in front of them, the student that they're leading.
Yeah, and I think these three stats may also help us understand why our world is slightly different than we expected.
Yeah.
There's some things going on in the world today, and you would go, why is that happening? Or why do kids care about that?
Yeah.
And when you understand their context through these statistics, it might help with that.
It does. Empathy is always, always needed in leaders. And what you're about to share, I've looked at what you've written. This is so necessary. In fact, I found myself thinking, I wasn't that way when I was a kid, you know? I don't quite say it that way to my wife, but
I think you talk that way.
Well, sometimes I do, yes. But anyway, so let's jump in. Without further ado.
Let's do it.
So you've got three big ideas.
Yes.
Based on data.
Yes.
So let's give me number one.
Number one is this generation is going to be, Generation Z is going to be the most diverse generation in U.S. history.
Yeah.
And here's what I mean by that. Millennials didn't quite get there, but Generation Z has now hit the point where there are more babies being born in the United States that are non-white than that are white.
Yeah.
In other words, Generation Z is going to grow up as the first majority non-white population. And in fact, the Pew Research Center, which analyzed U.S. Census data, came back and said only a little more than half of the post-millennial generation is white non-Hispanic.
Yeah.
And that change is going to cause some significant things.
So we will have a majority of minorities.
Correct.
I mean, using the old language.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And those other minority populations are still going to be minorities,
yes,
right?
Of course. Individually.
Exactly. Yeah. Individually. But as a whole, the minority populations will be the majority. Mm-hmm. Why is that going to change? Well, there's so many, obviously, implications to this. It reminds me of Brené Brown's statement. It's difficult to hate people up close. And here's what I mean by that. Whereas you and I, both of us are sitting here as white males. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We grew up maybe going into classrooms or in social environments that were mostly homogenous. Yeah. That's not going to be true for Generation Z. Yeah. In other words, these young people are going to be around people who are of different races, different religions, different ethnicities from them at the very earliest ages.
Yeah.
And what Brené Brown is tapping into, that it's difficult to hate people up close, is the divisions between people are going to start to evaporate.
Yeah. So you and I both believe this is good. This can be good.
I think it's going to be great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but yet it's going to explain some things perhaps to an older teacher, coach, leader.
Yes.
That goes, I can't believe you're just tolerant of everything.
Yeah.
Well, they've grown. It's hard to hate people up close. And if I know close friends that are different than me, I'm going to naturally be much more understanding of people who are different than me.
Yeah, or an adult who says, why are we changing this thing that's working fine?
Yeah.
And the Gen Z's retort to that might be, it was working fine for people who are like you.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're trying to make a change so that it's more inclusive and welcoming to all of the people that we've grown up with.
Yeah.
And I think that may be a change. In fact, when I was doing focus groups recently, I actually had a freshman and college student say, this is a word for word quote, we see things differently than our parents. Kids view news in a different way. They're being more open-minded because they live in a world that sort of forces them to. Isn't that an interesting statement?
Yeah.
We live in a world that forces us to see things differently. When you grow up in a world full of diverse options and perspectives, it leads to, and in fact insists that, you see things differently.
Yeah.
And so I think this is one thing that is a really, really good thing. But adults are going to have to look at this and realize the changes that they're making are because they've grown up in a very diverse world.
Yeah.
And if we're not open to that conversation, I think they're going to feel like we are ancient.
That's
ancient.
That's right, antiquated.
Exactly.
No doubt. All right, let's do number two.
Okay, so this generation is going to be more educated and less experienced than any generation in history. Mm. And what's fascinating is you started writing about this with the millennials, because millennials were more educated and less experienced than any generation in history. That trend has continued, and in fact, significantly. So this is really interesting statistics here. Only 19% of 15 to 17-year-olds in 2018 reported having a job, a part-time job. So 19%. It's a very, very small population, less than one in five. That number for millennials back in the year 2000 was 30%. Mm, so we've dropped 11%.
Yeah.
And then if you go all the way to 1968 with baby boomers, 48%.
Half of us.
Half of you had part-time jobs as a teenager. So one might look at this and go, well, this is just the changing of our world.
Yeah.
What's the problem with that?
No big deal. Yeah.
But we're seeing over and over and again that this is not a problem in the sense that kids absolutely have to have a job. The problem is that what happens if your very first time in a working place environment is at 22 years old?
Yeah.
That could be a problem. Lots of parents are, instead of inviting or forcing or asking their teenagers to get a part-time job, instead they're saying, focus on your homework or focus on that extracurricular activity or whatever it is. Lots of parents I've heard use the term of, school is your full-time job.
That's right.
Right?
We don't want you to work a
job. Exactly.
Yeah. I talked to many kids that they said, my parents won't let me work.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
And another rise, I didn't write this down here, but I did just read recently that a major decision that lots of parents are making is that they're giving their kids money, not for doing chores, not for doing anything. They're just giving them money.
Yeah.
And so that incentive that kids had to get a job back in 1968, which was, I want spending money or I've got to pay for my car or whatever, is no longer there.
Yeah.
So I would say part-time jobs are just as much about learning how to work as they are about understanding the value of earning a paycheck or making money or whatever. And if the first time that you're learning how to work is happening at age 22, you might be in a little bit of trouble.
Well, and here's why. Let me just kind of say the obvious. I think if the first time you're learning how to work is at 22, you're already an adult officially, if not theoretically.
Yeah.
And all kinds of habits have already been embedded into you where you do feel a little bit more entitled because everything's just been given to you. I mean, you just mentioned that money's – we talk to thousands of parents, at least I do, who would say, oh, yeah, I just give money to my kids.
Yeah.
I love the fact that you're providing father or mother, but if there's never been a learned thing of, man, I've got to do something, that's how life is. And so we're really not setting them up well for life if that's just been handed to them. And I have thought for years and years, and I'm not alone, something good happens when I exchange my talent, energy, and time for a paycheck.
Mm.
It's just good. It's effort. It's work ethic.
Yes.
It's thinking, wow, I want to steward this money well now that I've got it in my hand, and I don't just waste it. Where if it's given to me, I might waste it. You know, that sort of thing.
It's so true.
Anyway, this is fundamental, but I think what you're saying to us about Generation Z is something we're going to need to raise our eyebrows and go, wow, how do we lead them well? I argued in the book Artificial Maturity that it might create just that, artificial maturity.
Yes.
I'm well educated, so I know a lot of information, but I've not gotten a lot of experience. So I can be perhaps maybe a little cocky.
Yep.
I think I'm an armchair quarterback.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And that doesn't lead to humility and maturity.
In fact, the one thing we can almost guarantee it's going to lead to is a rude awakening.
Yeah.
Because
that's right.
The workplace is so much different than my school career, my educational career. So that's something to be looking out for. I don't think this is necessarily like the worst thing ever. Because there are ways you can provide experiences for kids that it's outside of the working place environment. Yeah. But this is something to be on the lookout for as this changes.
Yeah. All right, let's do number three.
Okay, number three. This generation is going to be by far the loneliest generation in U.S. history.
Interesting.
And probably the loneliest generation in world history.
Interesting.
And what's so fascinating is this stark contrast that's here. Because you could also say, it's also true to say that this is the most socially connected generation in history.
It's a paradox.
It is a paradox. But how could these two truths be true at the same time? Well, we all know the answer to that is our screens, right?
Yeah.
Because those connections that we have are in the digital space. They're through our screens. And because of that, there are cracks, I think, in this new social reality that we have, which is to say I have 1,000 friends, but I don't know any of them very well.
Yeah.
And so because of that, most of the people that I know actually don't know me that well.
Yeah.
So according to a large recent survey from the healthcare provider Cigna, most Americans, they say, suffer from strong feelings of loneliness and a lack of significance in their relationships. Nearly half say they sometimes or always feel left out, alone or left out.
Yeah.
And then 13% of Americans say zero people know me well.
Wow. Now, this is a result of many things, as you just pointed out, but more people are living alone.
Yes.
Dining alone.
Yes.
All kinds of aloneness happens in this hyper-connected world. It's just so strange. But I don't know if we know how to do relationships, perhaps like we did when I was a child.
It's certainly not the same. You don't rely upon your neighbors in the same way.
Yeah,
even all of the conveniences that we have when you think about you can travel without talking to a human being, you can order food without talking to a human being, you can be entertained without talking to a human being. Yeah. And all those things are great in the sense of their
convenience. Convenience,
But they're also making us less reliant upon community to get our needs met. And so what's changing, I think, is the intentionality required to connect with another human being.
Yeah, that's right.
And most people aren't putting in that effort. And in fact, Generation Z is growing up not realizing they need to put in that effort. And I would say that's a big difference. You and I might be isolated for a weekend, but we remember growing up in community, you know?
Yeah.
Today's generation would not remember a time with that.
Yeah. So as a child growing up, my experience was indeed different. I was socialized, if you will, back in the 60s and 70s. So the 60s and 70s were my first 20 years of life. Today, we're socialized, as you just mentioned, on a portable device with a screen. We can order food or whatever we want and never really talk to a human being. So I've talked to some university students recently that all had the same epiphany once they graduated. Friendship on a college campus is, I have thousands of people right in front of me.
Yeah.
And so building a friendship is rather easy. Once you move out onward from school, you have to work and be intentional about those friendships. And so it was, I was laughing because I learned the same thing with me.
Yeah.
But I had social skills. I wasn't brilliant, but I had because I was groomed and cultivated back then 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Today, they may not have that skill set, and they're going out into a world where, you mean I've got to work at relationships? I'd rather have my portable device. Well, good luck. You won't get the kind of human contact that you really desperately need, I think, just on a phone.
Yeah, I think that you said it spot on, that we are not solving the loneliness problem by connecting with somebody
that's
on a screen.
Yeah.
We still feel isolated, even though we're connecting. Mm-hmm. In fact, I focus groups that I did, I talked to one girl who said, I actually asked them, have you seen or do you know anybody who's experienced depression? And her answer was, I think everybody has spurts of being depressed. This is what this girl told me.
Interesting.
Another one reminded me that nobody is immune to this loneliness epidemic. In fact, she said, I feel like you can't not encounter it. Especially at our age, I feel like there's so many different people who deal with it at some point in their lives.
Yeah,
by the way, these two girls I'm talking about, they're both D1 athletes.
Wow.
So they've got a team of people. Not only are they out of college, not only that, but they've got a team. In this case, I think it was a volleyball team.
Yeah.
These girls that I spoke with, they've got a tight-knit team of 22 girls or whatever who are really close together.
Yeah.
And even in that space, they still feel isolated from people.
It's amazing.
It truly is an epidemic, I think. And all the statistics are telling us that this is different, I think, than any generation in history.
No doubt. So just to recap,
please,
you've talked about they're the most diverse generation in U.S. history, which will explain their incredible tolerance and acceptance of all people and lifestyles,
which is great.
In many cases.
Yeah.
It is a good thing, but
it's going to create changes.
That's going to create some changes. Number two, you said they will be the most educated and yet the least experienced in any generation of history as young adults emerge into adulthood because we gave them lots of school and not as much firsthand experience.
Yes.
I just read some data recently. Millennials clearly set the record of past generations for being the most educated. Nearly 4 in 10 have a college degree or higher, and with Gen Z, it may even be more.
Yes.
So lots of education. That's good.
Yes.
But not.
We've got to pair it with firsthand experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And then finally, you just said, "Boy, this one hits me the most: the loneliest and most private generation in history." And I think part of it is they learned privacy, at least from the mistakes made by the millennials, but that lonely thing can just, we humans were made as social creatures.
Yes.
To be social creatures.
Yeah.
And if we don't learn that, boy, we're going to have a mess on our hands. That's why social and emotional learning
so
is so vital.
Yes.
Just as vital as reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Yeah.
So this is so interesting. You're reminding me of an encounter I had last year. I was at Northview High School in Alabama, and we're kicking off Habitudes there and doing some teacher training. But they had me meet with and do some speaking to some high school students.
Okay.
They were sharp. I was pleased with how articulate and how educated they were.
Yeah.
Once again, very educated kids. But as I began to describe some of the very elements you just talked about, Andrew, and coupled with that, with the anxiety and the privacy and everything else, I saw their eyebrows go up. As if it was news. And I thought, this can't be news.
Yeah, but they have to know about this.
I kept speaking.
Yeah.
But I suddenly realized when I was finished and I opened it up for Q&A, while their eyebrows went up and why it seemed like it was an epiphany. One girl stood up, senior in high school, and said, I thought it was just us.
Huh.
Meaning she thought it was just the kids in Alabama or whatever.
Just the kids in their school or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. And I said, no, this is happening not only across the 50 United States, but in every industrialized nation we get into. We're working in 70 countries.
Yeah.
And we see it everywhere. So this is a phenomenon that's happening that we, the adult leaders, parents, coaches, teachers, employers, we've got to figure this out to lead them well.
It's so good.
Yeah.
For a bit of application, this question of how well do you know Generation Z? I would just strongly encourage everybody who's listening, please seek out information on them. If you read a statistic about them, go take it to a Gen Z kid and say, hey, I just read the statistic. Give me insight into what this is about. There's a statement that you make that's so helpful, and I think about it all the time. You say, you can't lead them until you read them.
Yeah, or at least you can't lead them well until you read them well. That's for sure.
And I think that we as adults have to be practicing this
no
principle.
Doubt about it. Yeah.
I've given you three places to start. I would just encourage you to keep going.
Yeah. Well, Andrew, thanks for, I appreciate you doing some of this research. This has been a fun book to work on.
Yeah.
You can take it from here, but I appreciate the insights you shared today.
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of you are listening are like, that's three quotes or three statistics. What else is there? Yeah. There's a lot more.
Yeah.
And in fact,
yeah.
you and I, Tim, have been working for more than a year on this new yeah. book that's coming out. We're calling it Generation Z Unfiltered.
Yeah.
Because our desire is to remove all of the hearsay mm-hmm. about who these kids are and actually say, if we take out all the filters, yeah. who are they really? What yeah. are they really struggling with? And in fact, we isolate nine specific challenges yeah. that we think they're going to face.
Yeah.
That's really over and above the things that millennials face.
Yes.
And yeah. we isolate them and also provide really practical yeah. solutions in this book. So Generation Z Unfiltered, right now the pre-order is live. The book's going to come out
yeah.
In the fall. But,
pretty excited. We're offering a pretty large package.
Yeah.
At no extra charge from the book. So talk about what that package is.
So obviously this goes without saying, you're going to get a lot of stuff with the pre-order that you're not going to be able to get for the same price after the book comes out. But when you pay $24.99, you're going to get the book, the audiobook, a digital discussion guide. You're going to get an ebook. You're going to get table topics, which are going to be really cool ways for you to talk about the stuff in the yeah. book with actually Gen Z students, whether you're a mm-hmm. parent, teacher, coach, whomever.
Yep.
And then you're also going to get Marching Off the Map as an ebook as yeah. well, and that one will come immediately. So six different items that are part of that $24.99 yeah. pre-order. We highly suggest you go out and grab that because that's going to be the best way to get your hands on it. There may be some of you who are thinking, you know what, I'd love to grab a couple of books and set up a book study with other parents in my yeah, community yeah. or with the teachers that I'm leading alongside. So I want to encourage you to do that as well. You can order that, get the pre-order right now at GenerationZUnfiltered.com. GenerationZUnfiltered.com. It's a great place to go out and check it out. As always, if you would really help us if you would rate the podcast. So give us 5 stars on iTunes or wherever you listen. That's really helpful for us. Follow us on social media. We love connecting with you there. So Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, we love getting connecting with you at Growing Leaders and at Tim Elmore. And then as always, if you've got ideas for things you want us to talk about, people you want us to interview, shoot us an email, podcast@growingleaders.com. Tim, thanks for jumping in on this conversation today. Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you next time.